And welcome to Wrigley Field in Chicago, Illinois. Today, the Pirates conclude their seven-game road trip, the finale of the three-game series against the Cubs. Off day tomorrow, interleague play against the Seattle Mariners, brief three-game homestand at PNC Park, and then the final six games the following week as the Pirates wind down their last 2 weeks in 2019. Greg Brown here in the booth with Neil Huntington. As the Pirates started this trip off, Neil, in good fashion in San Francisco, winning 3 of 4 against a Giants team that is much different than the Cubs. And maybe you want to start off with that. And you've touched on this, Neil, this season. The Pirates have done actually pretty good work against bad teams, but we have seen too often the Pirates get beaten badly by teams like the Cubs. The first two games of this series, the Cubs have scored 31 runs against the Pirates.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Brownie, these two games, we've gotten essentially two-plus innings out of our a main starting pitcher, out of one of our primary five starting pitchers. And anytime you're trying to cover essentially 14, 15 innings from your middle relief, it's a tough go. And that's essentially what we've covered in James Marvel. We're excited, and James has done terrific things to get here. Second major league start, obviously first major league start against St. Louis, but he's going to roll out there against three clubs. We're excited about, again, what he can become. But we've had to cover a lot of innings against the Cubs, and when you're covering innings with your long men and middle relievers against an offense that's swinging the bat the way the Cubs are in these two games, it's going to make for a couple of tough days. When our starters give us some depth and we can use that bullpen, that back end of the bullpen, even to get the 6th, 7th, and 8th and 9th with a close game, we have a fighting chance, and it continues to expose the weakest part of any team, but especially ours again this year, as it was a year ago. Our middle relief continues to struggle badly.
I think Clint Hurdle brought that up after the game last night in the press conference, that if you look at some of the, didn't name specifics, but no secret, Neil, to some of the guys that really were brought in, almost it appears as though you're just looking to try and get some innings in, because you're doing everything you can to get guys that have been DFA'd, for example, to kind of get you through the season. Is that oversimplification?
Well, it is beyond that. It's not just the guys are here because they're available. They're guys that we've had interest in and or believe have a chance to help this club. Maybe there's something we think we can help them with in the short term, or how do they fit potentially on next year's club. But in each guy's case, whether it's Markle, it's Rios, it's Jerez, or it's Wong, they each bring something of interest. There are guys that we haven't claimed on waivers. So it's not a couple years ago, a handful of years ago, I guess, we were almost in desperation state when we brought in a couple relievers late because we just were struggling to cover innings and we didn't have guys that we felt in AAA were ready to come up. Each of these claims has something of interest, and if we can help them turn a corner, they could help us in the future. But there's a reason why, in the same time, that they've been designated for assignment.
What about this latest pickup, claimed off waivers on Friday from the Giants, and he is here, Williams Jerez?
It's a former outfielder that hasn't been pitching his whole life, that's only been pitching for a little over a handful of years. But it's a left-hander with a good arm. He has a good slider, inconsistent location of the fastball, inconsistent strikes with the fastball. But again, a guy that we've talked about a few times in the past, and when he came available on waivers, the addition of a left-hander, he'll get some opportunities here the final 2 weeks of the season, and we'll work through roster decisions as we get to November 20th, when the rosters are due and players that are Rule 5 eligible have to be protected. We'll work through roster decisions as we get toward the tender deadline, and then really even over the entirety of the offseason, as we have a chance to add players via trade or add players via free agency. So the roster configuration is an evolving process.
Neil, what about Francisco Liriano? Ask about him, and then I want to ask you about Melky Cabrera. Liriano has done really solid work as a reliever. Somebody, I think today, has a story. Forgive me if it's Jason Mackey, perhaps, who's covering the team with the Post-Gazette, talking to Liriano about liking this bullpen role, not ready to give up on it in terms of continuing to pitch. So have you made any kind of offer to him? And would you like him to come back for next year?
Well, as we do, we don't discuss publicly whether we've made an offer or what the offer is, or have we not made an offer. But Francisco has done everything that we could have asked of him this year, transitioning full-time to the pen. He's been a quality veteran presence in that pen. He's taken the ball a ton and has thrown the ball well in that role. And, you know, again, because of that, it is somebody that, that there would be interest. We need to see how the mutual interest plays out over the course of time. But he's certainly done everything that we had hoped he would do coming in this year.
You get the impression he likes it here.
Well, he does, and he told us that on his way out the door the last time, and we've not had our end of season meeting. As we progress the final 2 weeks of seasons, we meet with the season. We meet with each player on a variety of things, and assuming that there is interest, then it could be a conversation. Sometimes conversations lead to agreements. Sometimes they don't.
Would you say the same thing about Melky Cabrera?
Melky's been the consummate pro as well, and for a guy that has not pinch hit a ton in his career, really hasn't been a DH a ton in his career, which you can argue DHing is essentially pinch hitting four times. So there was some question about whether or how he would respond to pinch hitting, and he's been phenomenal. Whether we've used him because we think the leverage situation is in the fourth inning or the sixth inning, or the leverage situation has come up in the eighth or the ninth, he's just stepped up there, and he's going to put the barrel on the ball. He's going to give you a quality professional at bat. And more often than I think most people would have expected, he's gotten some big hits for us.
Neil, what do you think those two have done for the Latin contingents in the bullpen and on the bench?
Well, they're just solid professionals. They show up every day. They get their work done every day. They're great leaders by example. Neither is the most vocal of leader. But they will, in one-off conversations, impact our young players, and not just our young Latin players, but our young players in general. And you do need some veteran presence in your clubhouse. And we've talked before about, it's tough to be all second- and first-year players. You do need some veteran presence and some guys that have been there and done that and have learned some hard lessons at the major league level, have learned how to handle success. And these two guys are good examples of how they go about it.
I get the impression that over the years you have sought out veterans, first and foremost guys that can contribute to the team, and we've seen that over the years with you, that you've brought them in. It's unlikely that you get them via free agent, but how much of a priority is that? And the reason I ask is I just wonder if what happened with Kyle Crick and Felipe Vasquez this past week, the fight became public, Crick out for the year because it tore up his hand, had to have surgery, Vasquez, the stitches in his nose. And I'm wondering if there's a veteran in there of some sort in that clubhouse at the time, either one of two things. Usually those fights get broken up and they don't get escalate to that point, or they don't become public. So is there extra importance to get some kind of veteran in here?
Yes, that could have played a role. Our challenge is there are many of these in any given clubhouse in any given season that never become public. Obviously, with the injuries, it was going to become public. And they don't not become public because teams cover them up. There are some things that happen in a clubhouse that stay in a clubhouse. And unfortunately, this was another event that we felt like there needed to be some discipline imposed. There needed to be some clear response that this is not okay, and that while it happens, I talked to a couple of veteran baseball guys and that were in clubhouses for many years, and they've said that this happens at least once in every clubhouse a year in every clubhouse that they've been in, and more often than not there's not injuries, and more often than not it doesn't get public, and that doesn't mean what happened is okay. It just may not be the outlier that it feels like.
I saw Ken Rosenthal had a long list of talked about different ball clubs and what they might need and so on, and a paragraph about the Pirates, kind of tongue-in-cheek, wrote about Pirates on track to set a dubious record, most clubhouse fights to be publicly revealed in one season, again kind of tongue-in-cheek, but then talked about how the Pirates could part ways with Vasquez and Crick, both talented, but when does a team take a stand? Do you feel, Neil, that you've kind of already taken that stand with what's happened?
Well, I think the fact that we've owned really all three issues publicly, have worked to impose through a variety of voices to be determined proper discipline. People can say we were too harsh or way too light. That's their opinion. But we did listen to a lot of people in each instance as to what we felt as an organization would eventually be appropriate player input in some cases. And we definitely understand. We very easily could have done what most teams do and just sweep it under the rug and not deal with it and not suspend or not fine. And we just didn't feel that that was the right way to handle it. We know that in doing so, we would bring public scrutiny because we made it very public. But we felt like it was the right thing to do. And again, recognize that there's still going to be a ton of criticism from all fronts because of how we handled it and respect the opinions of those. But we felt we've done what needed to be done.
We'll step aside right now and allow our stations to identify themselves. But we want to remind you that the Pirates and Mariners meet in a three-game series, a homestand that starts Tuesday night. Just three games of interleague play. And the following three in Milwaukee, the Pirates back home for the final six of the 2019 season. And a reminder, 2 weeks from today, the final game of the 2019 campaign. Go to Pirates.com for tickets. This is the Pirates Baseball Network. We're talking live here with the Pirates general manager, the Neil Huntington Show from Wrigley. And we'll have more to come on the Pirates Baseball Network. We're back, the Pirates and the Cubs playing here this afternoon in the finale of the three-game series, and on the mound it's Trevor Williams against Jose Quintana. Neil, some more players kind of banged up over the past week or so. Starling Marte continues to nurse a sprained left wrist, and now Josh Bell pulled up the other day, left groin discomfort. Jacob Stallings out with back tightness. Any kind of update on those guys? Any more severe than the other? Is it just day-to-day?
In Jacob's case, again, yes, the back locked up on him and would not anticipate he'll play today. We'll use the off day tomorrow and assess where he is on Tuesday. Marte continuing to progress, but still has some inflammation in there, which is somewhat limiting the range of motion, swinging the bat. In Josh's case, probably going to take a little bit of time here. And again, we want to be smart given that we're running out of days in the calendar, but definitely going to be through this series and would not be surprising to see him out for a handful of days at least.
When it comes to something like this, Neil, toward the end of the season, how much does the player say to you and the medical staff, hey, I've got about, let's say he misses the Mariners series, and then you talk about what will happen in Milwaukee, and maybe the medical staff is suggesting he shut it down for those three, but he says, you know, I've got a chance to hit 40 homers. I've got a chance still to lead the league in RBIs. Where do you come down on that, a personal goal for a guy like, again, Josh Bell?
I think regardless of team or personal interest, the medical condition comes number one. And is there risk for more damage? What is the risk for more damage? Is it something that's playable? And you absolutely want to respect the player that wants to come back and help his team. You have to respect the player that wants to come back and fight against other playoff teams to make the lineup as good a possible lineup as we can roll out there despite all the injuries that we've had. At the same time, we need to work to make sure we help the player make the best possible decision for not only the short term but the moderate and long term as well.
Any updates yet on Gregory Polanco? Continues to get those PRP injections, correct?
He does, and he's had the second of the series and is feeling better, and so that's a positive step.
And Chris Archer was throwing on this road trip. Any possibility we might see him on the mound before the end of the season?
The challenge is we're just going to run out of days. Chris has worked hard. He really wanted to make it back, even if it was for one outing at the end of the season. And as we've worked to build him back up, we're just going to run out of days. So we will shut down Chris Archer for the remainder of the season.
Neil, you talked last Sunday, I believe, about probably getting guys an extra day here or there in the rotation. Now, listed is Mitch Keller for Tuesday, Dario Agrizal for Wednesday, and I believe that would put, is it Musgrove as a possibility for Thursday, and are you holding off because he did seem to feel that foot again while running the bases, though he told us the initial injury was not running the bases, but he did feel it, I guess, when he ran out that triple.
He did, and again, we want to respect Joe's intent and his desire to go out there and compete and give his team everything he has, and he did. He felt it on the triple and then felt it a little bit more that next inning, so we want to see how he feels coming out of his start against the Giants, how he feels coming out of his bullpen in preparation, and if all goes well, then we could have him start on Thursday. If not, then we can pull the other guys forward and they'll pitch on their sixth day instead of their seventh day. And if we can drop Joe back in there, we can drop him back in there. But if it just doesn't make sense physically, then we'll make an adjustment.
How are you doing with in terms of the pitchers that are in the rotation currently and the innings? I know you're cognizant of that, watching it very closely.
Yeah, and the challenge with that is it is much more art than science. We certainly don't want to redline somebody. At the same time, there's a reason why we're trying to get a few more innings and a few more pitches out of these guys. Most importantly, they feel great, and they want the ball. They want to continue to go. They want to pitch on every fifth day. They don't want to be skipped. They don't want to go in their sixth day. They don't want to go in their seventh day. So part of the six-man rotation, even with the off days, is to manage the innings and to manage. And maybe we go one less start for the collective and don't push that much further. But, again, it is much more art than science. There's a rough formula out there that you can adhere to, and if nobody ever gets hurt, then it makes sense. But you also could shut a guy down earlier than that, and if they get hurt, is it because of X, Y, or Z? And so it's art and science. Our guys are physically responding well. They want the ball, and we have not seen yellow or red flags from an arm or shoulder standpoint to shut these guys down, but we are cognizant of it and are doing our best to kind of finish out appropriately, to have them finish this Major League season strong, to put them in a position to be able to add pitches and innings next year. And ideally, again, we're pitching competitively deep into September and into October.
Neil, you mentioned Jacob Stallings out with back tightness, hopefully back in there maybe on Tuesday. How much has he impressed you, maybe surprised you and the staff in terms of how he's performed, maybe more so than anything else, is with the bat?
Yeah, and he and Rick Eckstein and Jacob Cruz connected early on in this season and made an adjustment to his approach, which made an adjustment somewhat to his swing. And obviously it's playing, and it's playing much better. His exit velocities are higher. He's got some home runs this year. He's always been able to put the barrel on the ball and give you a quality at bat, but just there's more impact. There's more thump, and the offense is definitely playing better. Defensively, he continues to prepare well. He continues to lead well. He's made some adjustments to his receiving, and his receiving metrics have gotten better. He's doing some good things on both sides of the ball and continues to lead our staff well.
The Pirates, in their game notes, give all kinds of information, including catchers throwing and so on. Steven Barron, Francisco Cervelli still listed, Elias Diaz, Jacob Stallings. They also have the pitchers earn run averages in these statistics, and most clubs do this throughout the years. Do you take any stock in this, Neil? For example, Elias Diaz catching, when he catches, the team's earn run average is 5.88. Jacob Stallings, when he catches, the team's earned run average is 4.45. Does that mean anything at all?
Well, sample size becomes important. Most of your advanced analysts will tell you it really doesn't mean much because it depends upon who they're catching and who they're catching against and things like that. When you see a large separation, it does catch your attention, and there is something to it. We have and will continue to dive much deeper on that, but Jacob does a nice job defensively. Elias is working harder to get back to where he was defensively a year ago, and to get back to where he was offensively a year ago, and you know, Jacob has done a really nice job stepping forward on both sides of the ball.
I think we've probably touched on this, but is it still too early, not even in the offseason yet, for you to determine whether you have what it takes to be competitive next year behind the plate with what you have in-house?
As we'll do with every position on the field and every position of depth, we'll analyze where we believe these players are. Most importantly, we'll analyze where we believe these players can be or are going, and then we'll look at what else is available out there. Again, whether it's Major League free agency, whether it's a trade market, or in some cases, minor league free agency to improve our depth, and we'll assess that. I mean, the assessment is ongoing. We have not gotten to the off season, and that's when things really start to, your plan begins to be put in place.
We'll continue with the Pirates general manager. He is here. We're going to ask him why Neil Huntington is here on this road trip as we continue. Wrigley Field in Chicago, Pirates-Cubs, finale of the road trip here on the Pirates Baseball Network. Welcome back to Wrigley Field in Chicago. The Pirates and the Cubs playing the finale of the series. Trevor Williams against Jose Quintana. And with us in the booth is the Pirates general manager. We love having Neil with us. But oftentimes his travels take him all over the organization, so we have you on the phone a lot for these shows. But you happen to be here, Explain what goes on now, Neil, the last couple weeks of a baseball season for you.
Yeah, and it's been the same since year one. September is meeting mania, where we'll meet with every staff member, our coaching staff, our support staff. We'll identify what went well, what didn't go well, how we grow and improve upon what went well, and how do we adjust and make improvements on where it didn't go well. So that's a big part of September, and then we take all of that information. In the next part of September, as we sit down with every single player that's on the active roster or on the injured roster as well, and again, kind of review this season, review the off or prepare for the off season, and prepare for 2020, and just make sure that their questions are answered as they go out the door. But as importantly, how we can be better and how we can grow as an organization, and that's something that we've spent a lot more time on here the last 4 or 5 years, is how can I be a better general manager? How can we be a better organization? Where are some areas that we're falling short? Because if we're providing information from the player, we can gather just as much from them. And we've had some great perspectives from our guys. Each of those meetings takes a pretty good chunk of time, and to try to do them only at home wouldn't make a ton of sense. So again, I travel basically every September. I'm with the club the whole time. I pick my spots in season. I typically try to make the first road trip of the year. I'll try to make a trip around either before or after the draft. I'll catch up with them at some point during and kind of in and around the trade deadline. But you're right, to see the affiliates and to kind of do everything else that we need to do. I'm actually much less efficient on the road because there isn't really an office anywhere for me to work, so I feel much less efficient, although the ability to connect with players and staff is meaningful and why, you know, why general managers will travel.
And, of course, we've talked about this, I think, early on in your tenure, Neil. We talked about how in the old days, and things have changed, but back then, I remember talking to Steve Blass about that. He said, if we saw Joel Brown on the road, we would think, uh-oh, something's up, something's wrong. It was almost mysterious. It almost, he thought that Joe Brown wanted to give off that impression, that he wanted to keep a distance between himself and the players, and that his connection was really the manager, most years Danny Murtaugh or Bill Verdon. But obviously things have changed considerably.
Well, and what's interesting, Brownie, is there are front offices, there are GMs, probably more so in the late 90s, early 2000s, that went the exact opposite. And they felt like somebody, a general manager or an assistant general manager, had to be with the club every second of every day. And then I never worked for one of those, and so I've seen it work really well, where you do give your major league staff their autonomy and their space, but you do travel, you do stay connected, and in our minds find a balance between being with and being in the way.
We'll continue with the Pirates general manager. The Neil Huntington Show is here, and the Pirates and Cubs are playing ball. More to come on the Pirates Baseball Network. Welcome back. Last few moments with the Pirates general manager, the Neil Huntington Show. Pirates have Trevor Williams on the hill against Jose Quintana. Wanted to ask just the last few minutes, and maybe we spend more time in the last couple shows that we have, but just curious your general thoughts on Travis Sawcheck, who writes for several baseball publications. Recently, 538, he produced a story about minor league baseball. The title, Do We Even Need Minor League Baseball? Player Development Off-Field May Be Rendering Farm systems irrelevant, since the 70s Major League Baseball clubs have generally added more affiliates. Goes on to talk about the Astros, a model of modern player development, bucked that trend a few years ago, reducing their affiliate count from 9 to 7. Astros believe they could be more efficient producer of talent with fewer farm clubs. I didn't want to spring this on you, but just your general thoughts on that.
Yeah, and obviously it's hard to argue with the success that Houston's had at the major league level with their ability to help the players that are there. We look at it a little bit differently in that we're not traditional in that we just need to roll the bats and balls out there and the best will rise to the top. That's kind of traditional player development. We do believe that as players play the game with thought and mentality less and less The environment that Travis is talking about essentially become lab rats, and it becomes all data driven. It becomes all swing rate. It becomes spin rate, swing playing, this swing plays that. And what we miss is the human element of it. We miss the human analytic of it. And for those that feel like the game was played better 20 years ago or 40 years ago, it probably is because it was. And we need an opportunity to have players learn and grow, not only to maximize their spin rate, but to understand when to use their pitches and to understand how to compete and to get through an inning in which they've given up a bloop double and on a hard single. How do they go attack that next hitter? If you eliminate too many minor league franchises, which is what I believe Travis seems to be indicating, all of a sudden some of the very best players in our game don't get an opportunity. The Jake DeGroms of the world, the Jose Altuves of the world, maybe even someone like Paul Goldschmidt, Matt Carpenter. These are later round picks or lower. Starling Marte, Gregory Polanco, Pittsburgh specific. Your later round draft picks or your lower bonus guys. Basically, every major league team has two or three guys in the bullpen that were later round picks. If you have a finite number of opportunities, those guys might not get opportunity to become the players that they've become. Jose Ramirez probably gets passed over, doesn't get an opportunity. So that's the shame of it. Baseball is one of the most challenging games to learn to master. And to progress, and it takes time for a guy to become ready to play at the major league level. That guy that jumps from the draft to the big leagues in a year is rare. We're seeing one here in Nico Horner because of emergency, and Nico's come up and done a heck of a job for them, but he's the outlier typically. So the game teaches. It does a wonderful job of teaching. Data and technology can play a wonderful role in coaching and in good coaching, but you do need to go play the game. You do need to go experience how to apply that spin rate, how to apply that swing change. And the game is sometimes the best teacher that we have. You learn through failure. You learn through struggles. You don't always have failure when you're just trying to get a spin rate.
One of his arguments, it's funny you say that, because in this story he says recently some players like young stars Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis, David Peralta to a lesser degree, Rougned Odor have skipped rungs and they are not worse for it. Brian Reynolds, you could say, skipped AAA for all intents and purposes.
No, and that's a valid argument, and there are a handful of players. In fact, I'd argue some of those players that have skipped rungs are showing the wear because of that, not Soto. And hopefully not Brian Reynolds, but there are young players who get pushed, who aren't ready, who we never hear from again because they lost their confidence. They didn't lose their spin rate. They didn't lose their launch angle. They lost their confidence. They lost their ability to go out and believe that they were ready to play at that level. And the only way to get that back is through coaching, but it's also through playing. And you can grab examples of on one side, and you can grab examples on the other side. We believe in minor leagues. We believe in player development. We believe in coaching. But we also believe in analytics, and we believe that they can help our coaches be better coaches and help the right players expedite their development curve. It's a tough question to answer in a short period of time because we do see the other side of it. And the small bets argument has value, and we want to see the great players get a chance and develop the right way.
Yeah, we'll pick that up, I'm sure, at a later time. We thank Neil Huntington. Coming up, the pregame on the Pirates Baseball Network.